Hour two of Let's Get Legal, where, as you just heard, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. This hour we got Mike Leonard, Leonard Trial Lawyers. He's a federal defense attorney. He is a whistleblower attorney and always comes loaded with sandwiches and questions for me. Hey, Mike, how are you?
That was my attempt at a bribe.
It worked.
Kind of testing the waters of how it would apply to Madigan trial. I give you a sandwich, John. With the expectation you invite me back sometime, is that a bribe, or I just give you a sandwich with no expectation, but you do something for me? Does that count? Really a lot of legal issues raised here, John.
I had half of the Italian. Where was it from? It was very good.
It was from La Petito. Which was my law school go-to sandwich place.
So where's that at?
It's over on Huron, near State.
Okay, so that away.
That way. And the listeners can see which way you're pointing.
Yeah, exactly. This is
But
radio.
It's a good segue, John. I love how
what
you
did
do
Iridian
it.
What did Iridian have, by the way? You got Iridian me
had Iridian had the turkey.
The turkey. Oh, yeah. That's very good.
Which you gave a thumbs up to. But it's a great segue, John, because we start with our trial lawyers segment called Shark Bites, as you remember.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Let's remind the listeners what this is.
Any legitimate trial lawyer in their own city, and especially when they go to try a case out of town, they got to know the local fair, right? Mm-hmm. So it kind of brings up Super Bowl. I've been getting just inundated with calls and texts and messages about you.
Oh, always.
Yeah, and they're like, what is John Hansen? What are his top five go-to foods when he watches the Super Bowl? And first of all, I want to tell the listeners, I'm a little disappointed that you're not an enthusiastic Super Bowl watcher, which bothers me.
It's fine. I just don't count down for it. I don't. I think what it was is that for years I worked in morning TV, so my call time, I'd be up at 2:30 or 3 in the morning. So Super Bowl Sunday was any Sunday. I was filled with so many Sunday scaries, and even the Super Bowl couldn't overcome it. Right.
Well, so I think it's time to move on, John.
I think so too. It's been a while since I've been on morning television. So yes, I do like it now more. I will watch it. I'll be at a bar tomorrow watching it. So go-to foods.
So what I want is your top five,
Okay. I'll go with boneless wings.
Ooh, that's on my list too.
Love that. I'll go with pretzel bites. Love a good solid carb with maybe a nacho cheese I can dip that in.
Sure, solid. That's good, yeah.
Cheese curds.
Okay.
I'm going to be in Wisconsin.
Particularly
in
Wisconsin, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like little carrots and celery.
Oh, no, John. No,
you got to have some fiber.
No veggies at a trial or a Super Bowl. I'm sorry, no.
Well, that could spell problems then for days if I don't get a little fiber going. So carrots and celery, and then I have a fifth option. Drinks aren't an option as number
five. No drinks, no, just food.
Chips and guac.
Okay. So
I'm going to go and do something else. My dad, and it's a Hansen family thing that's been passed down from generation, shrimp dip.
Wow. For the Super Bowl.
Any gathering has to have shrimp dip. That's like a cream cheese based shocker with like bits of shrimp, and you do Campbell's shrimp soup, cream of shrimp.
That's old
school.
It's a
whole thing, yeah. It's an old school thing my grandma used to make, and that's a Hansen tradition.
That's pretty solid. I got to say, your choices are surprisingly good in light of your somewhat disdain for the Super Bowl. But
it's not disdain, but go ahead.
Let's go to a real trialer's top five, John. I'm going to go seven-layer dip, the kind you might get a Jewel, in that plastic tin. Love it. Chips and dip, preferably with ranch or maybe onion dip.
Oh, onion dip's
good. The old school jar. Yeah. Pizza, of course.
Okay.
Boneless wings, and then I would go with a couple Taco 12s from Taco Bell.
A couple Taco 12s?
Yeah, well, you're assuming you have a couple people over there, too. So that's the trialer's top five. Ugh. Hopefully the listeners will text in and see if they can augment our list. The other thing a lot of listeners were thinking about, John, with regard to you and the Super Bowl, is that a lot of them were concerned and upset that I don't think you're either not born or you're like one when the Bears went to the Super Bowl in 85. And they had the Super Bowl shuffle. So a lot of people think you don't really know the Super Bowl shuffle, don't understand that whole era, do you?
I was one and a half when they went, so I have no memory of the Bears in the Super Bowl. I feel like I'm pretty good on the Super Bowl shuffle and covering that era. Dan Hampton's on our program a lot. I've chatted with him. Over the years, the lore of the super fans on SNL has played into that. I've seen the Super Bowl shuffle. One of my best friends in high school was obsessed with it still in the late 90s when I went to high school. So I feel pretty good about it. I know the words of the chorus. I can actually do some of the dance.
Wow.
So, I wasn't there for it. But I definitely feel like I'm of that era, which
some
is strange.
Of the dance was like guys standing there, just like moving just their hips swaying. One right another. So I'll get ask you an easy question.
Oh, no, who no, were, no. There's trivia?
Were, yeah. Who were, in your estimation, the two worst dancers on the Super Bowl shuffle?
I don't know. I don't know. I can't really even... Man, you're putting me on the spot. This is a good time to take a commercial break. 312-981-7200. I don't know. Let's pose that to the listeners.
Okay.
It'd be rude of me to influence anyone's thoughts.
Who do listeners think were the two worst dancers on the Super Bowl shuffle?
I'd say the punky QB.
Well, he didn't really dance. They actually superimposed his face because he wasn't there, so they kind of superimposed him.
Right.
So you can't, I have to say, for that one. Yeah.
Okay. But, I don't really know. Let's skip that one and see if any listeners text in.
Okay.
I'm a little embarrassed here.
So I'll wait to give my,
Yeah, what about you? Someone says Fensick.
Yeah, he was one of the worst. I would say that's a very good pick. Yeah. I would go with Steve Fuller, who was like the backup quarterback number four. Horrible. He didn't even really pretend to dance. He was like, I didn't even know what he's doing up there. And I'd go with number 51, Jim Morrissey, who was like a backup linebacker. Just no moves whatsoever.
We've gotten six texts now in the last minute all saying Fensick. So.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and especially Fensick, since he was in the first row. So, but he was really particularly bad. I would agree with the listeners.
Oh, there's another one. This one in all caps. Fensick. So
yeah,
there you go.
Very solid. And especially, you know.
Man, people have opinions on this.
The guys in the back row are sort of hard to see, hard to assess their dancing, so they kind of got a break. And 51, Morrissey was in the back row. But Fensick is out in center, and he really is poor.
Yeah. Man, the texts just keep flowing in.
Really?
Man, someone said Gary Fensick, Steve Fuller. Someone said Samurai Mike.
He didn't move much. He did a good job singing, but he did not move much. I will agree with the listeners.
Man, this is something. All right, well, then I will definitely say.
It strikes deep at the heart of Chicago.
Exactly. And, well, I wasn't alive for the Super Bowl. I get Bears culture and all that. But just seeing people's immediate reaction to this makes me very clear that I may have been alive, but I do not know this world.
But you didn't live, John.
I did not live this Super Bowl Bears world. It's kind of one of the deep regrets of my life that I wasn't born 10 years earlier for that and that alone.
Well, I try to describe to my kids because it was unbelievable. You'd be any bar, any restaurant in the Chicagoland area. I mean, for miles, any direction. And all of a sudden you'd hear, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Oh, yeah.
And the entire place would go crazy, start singing, start dancing. It was just, it's hard to even describe that atmosphere.
Yeah. I mean, I was in college or had just graduated when they went to the Super Bowl in 06, or sorry, the 07 calendar year, the 06 season.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. I mean, just the thought of, I mean, that was, I think, when I realized fully, oh, yeah, we love our Cubs, those Sox too, the Bulls, great, of course, during the championship runs. I remember all of those.
Yeah.
This is a Bears city, though.
Yeah.
And just even that playoff run and the subsequent ones we had in years after that or right before it, too, there's nothing like it in the city when the Bears are good.
And I would argue that the 05-06 was like probably about 10% of the craziness of 85. And there's just all the cast of characters, you know, too.
And then on a week of Virginia McCaskey passing away, too.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
102 years old.
Interesting. The big question is, will that result in a, you know, we'll tie it to legal, will that result in a sale of the Bears? That's the big legal question,
John. Hey, way to bring it into the legal show, the one we're on right now.
I love that. You segue. You set it up on a silver platter for me, John.
727 says, Steve Fuller wasn't even swaying in the right rhythm.
I got to agree. It's amazing. Like, I don't know what he's doing, because I hope listeners go back and watch, because I did this morning in anticipation of confronting you on cross-examination with the Super Bowl shuffle. Yeah, he's not even really, like, you would think he's never danced before.
Maybe he hasn't.
And maybe never since, yeah, and with good reason.
John Hansen here, Mike Leonard over there, federal defense attorney and notable Super Bowl fan and all-around good guy.
Thank you, John.
You have more questions for me?
Yeah, so we're going to keep it legal and we're going to keep it Super Bowl.
Okay.
Despite your misgivings.
I have no misgivings about this.
Now you're backtracking. You corner a witness and then you try to
make
a comeback and they're not viewed as credible.
I am fine with the game. It will be fun to watch. I will do it. It's not something I count down to. It's not a marquee day on my calendar. It's not a day to remember usually unless something memorable happens. One thing I like about the Super Bowl is I like the collective experience of people all watching something together. You don't get many of those anymore on network TV. There aren't these big moments. These moments are often political, right? It's debates or the election night, which is fraught with anxiety on one side or the other. And so I like that the Super Bowl is like someone we all watch together. there's maybe some drama about the halftime show or the commercials or like when the power went out in one Super Bowl, I remember, right? It becomes a collective like experience on X or Twitter where we all can make memes. And so that's fun.
But, okay. Okay. I'm going to give you, you're sort of 50% in, John.
Yes. Yeah. I'd say I'm 50% in.
Okay. So here's the legal question. So what does it mean for a Super Bowl host, say this is a legal issue, to have to pass a ordinance in advance of the Super Bowl establishing what's called a clean zone?
So the Super Bowl requires the host city to do this?
Yes.
So this is something the NFL comes up with?
Yes.
So my guess has to do with something about the private businesses or sale of things around the immediate area that have to then be partners with the NFL already.
Pretty darn good, John.
Is that close?
Yeah. So
In fairness, I want to let the listener know, Mike posed it to me in the commercial break, and I did have some time to ponder on it.
Yeah, John sat there for like 2 minutes looking up at the ceiling, trying to get me to give him clues. I refused. But in any event, yeah. So I was looking up top legal issues for the Super Bowl, and one recurring thing that came up is what are called clean zones. So in awarding a host city, it's New Orleans this year, they require them to pass like an ordinance in advance, which establishes this clean zone, which means in a huge wide swath of land, kind of all around the Super Bowl, in like the week leading up and a few days after.
So not just the parking lots.
No. It's all public property.
Whoa.
And basically says that you can't have any sort of commercial activity that's not approved. And it's really an attempt by the NFL to essentially keep that zone clean, meaning no marketing materials, no booths, no selling of merchandise. You know, they kind of...
Wait. Okay.
If you have an established business, it doesn't affect you.
Okay,
right?
So if you've got a bar in the zone.
If I have a store that's in that area, I'm fine. I can do whatever I want. Right?
But in the park.
But I can't put up anything. I can't put displays outside. And you know, it's interesting. You can't, in advertisements, you can't even use Super Bowl.
Well, right, I know that.
Which is
right.
Pretty wild.
But allowed to say the term, by the way, as we're talking from a news perspective about it, but if
Super
I were
Bowl.
To attach,
yeah.
This is our big game coverage on the legal side brought to you by Blake My Blake, we couldn't do that.
Yeah, which is crazy. So the clean zone is an attempt to, in a wide area of public property all around the stadium in days before and after, limit commercial activity except to the ones that already exist.
Wait. How is that not a First Amendment violation?
It's been challenged before. There was a guy, when Phoenix was the host city, a guy who was within the zone owned a building, and he wanted to sell advertising on the side of the building.
This is right. He
owns
the building.
Because it was a Super Bowl. We figured, like, what a great opportunity. And it was challenged in court, and the judge ruled in his favor. But in general, it's upheld. So, I mean, people, depends how broadly it's interpreted, depends how it impacts somebody. They might try to challenge it in court. But New Orleans, if you look up online, they passed this ordinance a few months ago in advance, which tries to limit commercial activity in the clean zone. So we all learned something here today, John.
Is it just commercial activity? What about protests? What about...
So they have, interesting, yeah, they do have a section that basically says, hey, we're not limiting anyone's constitutional rights or right to free speech. They actually set areas in the clean zone for that type of activity, which is kind of interesting.
So if you had a cause you wanted to protest inside the clean zone, they'd have a zone for you to do that.
Correct. So NFL thinks of everything, John.
Yeah. That's interesting. And obviously, if you wanted to permit a march through the area or something, the city would not grant that just based on...
Yeah, they would probably say it would be a public health concern.
Which makes sense,
or like
too. Yeah,
too
yeah.
much.
Security, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
That is interesting. It doesn't surprise me in the slightest. But I do appreciate that, like, let's say there's a bar already in the zone. They can't control which beer you serve there
nothing like that. But they can stop you from having any stands outside, people being out there selling any kind of merchandise. Really, it just limits anything that doesn't already exist.
Okay. Any other Super Bowl legal things or questions you have for me?
Yeah, I wish your last guest was still with us on the show.
Oh, Patrick Dolan.
Patrick Dolan, I hope he's listening, because in my thirst to find legal issues for the show in advance of the Super Bowl, the one thing I came up with, and these employment lawyers, they're shameless, John. So this big national law firm.
They're not, but go on.
Yeah. I can. It's
you can
my,
say whatever
my
you
opinion.
Want. It's your
don't
opinion.
Have, don't have
amendment
rights,
right.
John.
Yeah, right.
So I found this online. One of the first thing I find in legal issues in the Super Bowl is an article by a giant national employment law firm called Big Game, Big Distractions, Navigating Employment Issues During the Super Bowl. And it goes on to tell you, as an employer, how you should watch out for Super Sick Monday. because a lot of people are going to be taking time off. You should go out of your way, John, to remind the employees of your sick leave policy in advance. Number two, it talks about addressing workplace distractions because, John, the game can be very distracting. You know, leading up, people might want to talk about it at the water cooler. They might spend too much time communicating about it, so they'll tell you how to deal with that. And then finally, they have a section on handling office pools and gambling. So if Patrick Dolan's out there, this is employment lawyer excess, and it's political correctness to the maximum, John.
So you're saying that this firm that has a little article and is trying to get business out of it is trying to ruin all the fun that happens in an office. Who cares if people talk about the game?
Who cares? And I hope no one besides me has read this article, and I hope the authors are listening.
I do think at this point I just want to point something out. I have a scheduled day off from WGN on Monday, so this is not a sick day. This is not a thing. I have, and this is also not baby stuff. So if no one hears me on Your Money Matters on Monday, don't start thinking the baby's here or anything like that. Oh, knock on wood, I should say. You never know, of course. But I have a scheduled day off that night. It has nothing to do with the Super Bowl.
John, in my business, it seems like you're creating an alibi, which when you create it in advance and tell everybody, sometimes it's not credible.
No, I think it's even more credible. I'm letting people know I am off on a scheduled day on Monday.
Oh, we'll see.
Okay. 312-91-7200. We will move on from the Super Bowl to other pertinent legal issues. I don't know if that's if it's icing downtown. Doesn't look like it. Traffic didn't buy. I'm just curious, Mike, because that Wednesday icing event at night
was rough. Yes. That was rough, John. Coming back from paddleball at night, that was tough.
Ooh.
Tough sledding.
Tough sledding after paddleball. But I want people to text in, 312-981-7200. What are you seeing in front? I just want to – these icing events can happen really quick. And some areas, it's a sheet of ice. Other areas, it's not. And our job at WGN is to provide as much information to you all as you can as you move about the area. So text us. Let us know what you're seeing out there in terms of this icing that is expected for the next couple of hours here or there in certain places. We're talking about the Super Bowl and talking about the legal aspects of the big game. And Mike's been identifying a cool couple interesting stories or things to complain about. He was complaining about an employment law firm having trying to make a quick buck off of employers to call them to get guidance on, you know, gambling in the office or if people take off sick the day after the Super Bowl. Patrick Dolan did text back Mike Leonard saying that you should stick in your own lane and leave employment lawyers to the experts.
Wow. It's funny he didn't come in the studio to say that. He did that from the comfort of his car. I think he's afraid to say it in the booth, John.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what else you got for us?
Well, in my business, John, which is, you know, 75% or more criminal defense, I wanted to cover probably a couple of the most famous arrests in connection with the Super Bowl.
Arrests? Okay.
I'm going to go with a player. I'm not going to give his name just to not to sully him any further. He was a member of the Atlanta Falcons. He was a defensive back, right? And the day before the Super Bowl, in the Super Bowl city, the host city, he was presented with the Bart Starr Award for high moral character.
Mm-hmm.
Big award. You know where this is going, John.
It doesn't seem like you're setting me up for a great story.
No. So the same night he was arrested in that Super Bowl, same Super Bowl town, for soliciting a sex act. That's not good.
I don't remember this.
Yeah. And then the next day they let him play. And the next day in the Super Bowl, he got burned for an 80-yard touchdown. So a lot of people say justice was served, John.
Ah, okay. Yeah. That's an interesting legal aspect of things. Surprised he played in the game, but I guess it's
Well, first of all, he was a starter. If he was a backup, he probably wouldn't have played. But since he was a starter, you know, we got to let the legal system run
its course. Presumed innocent.
Exactly, John. Exactly.
Just because you're arrested doesn't mean you're guilty.
Which, that's a great segue, John. Presumed innocence, because you wanted to talk about the new media events that are going on in the law, and I'm going to throw out two.
Okay.
I know some people, including you, might be tired of OJ-related themes.
I'm not tired of it. I'll watch any new show about it. You got one for me?
Yeah, I was shocked because yesterday I was kind of, you know, searching around for something to watch. It's called American Manhunt, OJ Simpson. It's in the newest documentary, and I got to say, it's phenomenal. And it's basically all interviews, really nothing else. It's not commentary. It's nothing. So just have a section, say, like, for instance, blood evidence. And then they interview all the key participants, right?
From the actual day.
Yeah, the detectives and all that and some witnesses and things of that nature. So I think it's really fascinating. It's really well done. And I think also since all these participants now have a lot of time to kind of put it all in perspective, some of them have interesting views that they didn't have at the time. And you even see a little bit of infighting among the detectives. And I think that's because of how the verdict went. And I think they believe that people are pointing the finger at them. But I don't think it would have mattered. I think that case was decided so heavily on race-based reasons. I don't think it mattered if one detective made a mistake in collecting evidence. I think the whole thing collectively was a cause of problem. But you see people having, you know, kind of interesting new viewpoints that I think they would never have said or shared or thought they had back then.
And what's the name of this again?
American Manhunt, O.J. Simpson.
And what streaming is this?
I think it's Netflix. Yeah,
you think so?
Yeah, are they contributing to WGN?
No, no. Okay. I just mean like you come to me with a new show to watch. You better be able to say,
go find it. Go find it. No, it's, yeah. I believe it's Netflix. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely give that.
Now
a
the
look.
Second one is a different genre. It's book, and you said Presumed Innocent, the new book by Scott Turow, who writes a lot of good legal thrillers that are fiction, is called Presumed Guilty.
Okay.
So it's come full circle. You know, remember the character Rusty, who is charged with the murder of the
no
fellow?
No idea what you're talking
oh
about.
Oh, my God. You don't know Presumed Innocent?
No.
Oh, my God. Just like you missed the Super Bowl shuffle, you missed Presumed Innocent?
Was it a movie then, too?
Oh, my God. It was a book first by Scott Turow, who's a famous Chicago lawyer. And then they did the movie, Presumed Innocent.
Who's
with Harrison Ford is the lead character.
He's good.
He's a prosecutor who's...
He's Indiana Jones, right? I'm just kidding. I love Harrison Ford. I'm just kidding.
John, this is a legal show.
I'm just kidding.
My God. So it seems like you missed a lot of historical events in Chicago and elsewhere. But in the original Presumed Innocent, he's a prosecutor. It's supposed to be basically in Cook County, accused of murdering his co-prosecutor. It goes on trial and, you know, the whole story. So that same guy is now in the Presumed Guilty book, and he's trying the case, and he's representing what is almost like his stepson in a murder trial.
So is it a sequel?
You could argue, yeah, like many years later after this guy went on with his career, after being found not guilty and presumed innocent, went on to be a judge, and now he's a defense lawyer. So
okay.
It's very good.
Presumed Guilty. That's great stuff. All right, those are two recommendations. I never thought we'd get this text, Mike. How about some Madigan trial talk?
Yes.
This is from the 708. We've been spending the last couple of weeks, anytime we talk about this, saying that no one wants to hear anything about this trial.
I love it, John. I love it.
We have been updating people, though. We keep people posted. I just know it hasn't been lighting up the phone lines or the text lines. Me and John Williams talk about that all the time, about how just there's this fatigue of not only this trial, Mike Madigan, obviously the previous trials with AT&T, and why can't I remember the other one?
ComEd, AT&T,
of course. But then you had Ed Berg last year, et cetera. Okay.
I love it. You know what happened, John, today is we just wore people out with our boring Super Bowl talk. And you're like, oh, my God.
Give me something real.
Talk about the Madigan trial. Yeah.
Before we get to that, I just want to give out two reports. We're getting 630 Lake Street and Bartlett, Hanover Park. Some misting out there, but the roads are fine. And 331, sleet and snow in the western suburb of Aurora. Okay.
Wow. Interesting. So let's talk Madigan.
Yes.
If people aren't up to speed, if they're not paying attention, it's in the eighth day of deliberations. They concluded their eighth day of deliberations. They had, as we talked about last time, early on in the trial, the jurors had a number of notes that they brought to the attention of the judge. Not really anything too exciting, kind of mundane stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This past week, they had one interesting question, which really dealt with more substantive stuff about the case. It was a really interesting question about jury instructions and kind of how bribery is defined. And they're asking really kind of a fundamental question to the court, which is interesting, right?
Hmm, they were just like, what is bribery?
Well, it wasn't put like that. It was like, could this activity constitute, you know, something else that's defined in the instruction? So,
is a judge allowed to answer that, to lead them too far along? Because I imagine there's something a judge doesn't want to answer, right?
Great question. So, yeah, jurors ask all sorts of stuff. I would say a lot of it's just mundane stuff about housekeeping, like, hey, judge, what time can we deliberate to today? You know, things like that. Can we set this schedule?
I need more highlighters, like they said
exactly.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, which I enjoyed that. But there are a lot of questions that you can't answer because they relate to factual questions in the case or legal interpretation, right? So sometimes the prosecutor and defense lawyer will argue about what the appropriate response is. You know, a lot of times you're arguing the judge, there should be no response, there should be nothing told to them, especially on the defense lawyer side. If they're ever asking for interpretations of a particular instructions or a definition greater than what's already in there, from the defense perspective, we're already saying, no, judge, you shouldn't respond to that. They should be told to refer to the instructions. And sometimes it might be appropriate to say, see instruction, you know, 1.4, which defines X. And sometimes that's okay.
That's interesting.
In this instance, they were really, in my view, they were kind of asking for an interpretive question. They were like, could this particular type of conduct could it mean X, right?
Oh,
could,
man, if I'm his defense, I'm saying don't answer that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because the thought would be if they're having a debate about the root question of one of these charges, a big one, the big one, bribery, then there's some debate in the room. And as a defense attorney, I would say, oh, I want that conversation to continue.
Yeah.
Because the more chatter about it, the more questioning I would imagine. I mean, we never know what ends up happening. Not trying to read the tea leaves here, although I'm sure you are. I would say that's a good thing.
Yeah, you want it from the defense perspective. You want to hear, well, first of all, that 8 days is, you know, always good. But let's keep in mind Blagojevich and Governor Ryan, deliberations were even longer than this. So
they still got guilty verdict,
I would certainly expect to have a verdict next week sometime, no doubt in my mind.
But, that's what you said last time.
But it's not superly excessive long so far, right? But yeah, there's a lot of times the argument in response to the juror note is really important because prosecution's like, okay, judge, like in this instance, the prosecutor made the proposal that they craft a particular response, which the defense, of course, objected to. But there was kind of an intermediate agreement because the judge actually has to make that decision. He takes input from both sides, but he's going to do what he thinks is legally correct.
What did he decide then?
He decided that there was kind of, you could argue maybe it's interpretive. It was basically like explaining that if it was this, yes, that could fall within, you know, the definition of something that would constitute bribery. If it wasn't, you know, if it was just normal everyday things, then it might not be. So it didn't tell them, you know, the answer to the question. But I guess if I'm the defense, I'd probably prefer that nothing was said to them.
What are your instructions?
Yeah, you want the jury to say, hey, you have everything you need in front of you. That's all we're going to give you. So, you know, who knows?
That's fascinating. If I were the foreperson, I'd send a note. Is it the foreperson who decides whether to send one or not, by the way?
Well, anyone can ask. Anyone can ask the one that be sent. It usually comes under the foreperson's name. So
man, I would mess with people so much with my notes.
Oh, my God. What would you do, John?
I'd be like, Judge, what do you think? If you were to vote, what would you vote? Just to really get you all upset and everyone all upset.
You would just get you're a bad juror, John. You're not like your friend. You're a bad juror.
If we were sequestered, I'd ask for, you know, what games did they play on The Price is Right this morning, Judge? I'm curious. I gotta stay up on my soaps.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. And the juror, the listener question about Let's Talk Madigan, we're just in the speculation land. You know, I'm still staying with my initial gut feeling that the government failed to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt, and that we're going to get a lot of not guilty counts and maybe some mistried counts where they're hung. But that's still my prediction. And I think for the defense, it's a good sign that they're still debating some of these critical issues, factual and legal issues at this stage. So I think it's a good sign for a defense team who did a great job at this trial.
I think it's easier for you to say that, Mike, because you're a defense attorney, and also because then if it turns out it's all guilty counts, you can be like, well, I was just trying to...
John, I had my
defense attorney hat on. I'm sorry.
No. I'll take my licking if that happens, John, but or never appear on the show again. But I don't expect that to be the case.
773 says, hi, guys. We're in Old Norwood Park across from the oldest house in the city of Chicago. First of all, that's cool. No snow, no ice. Love you guys. That's from Marlene. Keep them coming. 312-981-7200. By the way, 708 says, thanks for the Madigan trial info. I think the jury question means Madigan's going to be guilty. My prediction.
Okay. Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, the question went to the idea of if someone's given a job, you know, one of these, what people are calling kind of no work, ghost payroll type jobs, right? Mm-hmm. The idea is, you know, if someone's given that in the ordinary course of business, and they don't do anything for it, and there's something exchanged, well, of course, that could constitute bribery, right? But if someone is actually given a legitimate job with nothing in exchange, and they provide the services, there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, in this case...
You mean if you... they were asking, essentially, that whether or not someone actually does the job that was assigned to them, would that change whether it was a bribe that was given or not?
Well, it's a factor. It's not as simple as that. But I think they were just basically getting at the concept of, gee, does it mean that if anyone received a job that was recommended or influenced by Madigan or McLean, is that somehow in and of itself anything wrong with that? Which there's not, right? You know, anyone can pitch anybody to hire somebody. There's nothing wrong with that. The question is, are they getting something in exchange for that, right? Is there a pre-agreement or is it part of a criminal racketeering enterprise? And so,
but just the basic, hey, I recommend this person for this job.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. It happens all the time. politicians do it. We do it as regular citizens. So
I've never done it.
That's what. Oh, come on.
Except for begging for Iridian to be my producer all the time.
True.
Exactly. True. But I don't think that's bribery.
No.
Although
no.
She got sandwiches from you. So yeah. We'll get into this more. We got to take a quick break, and then we'll wrap things up for a few more minutes. Any questions you have, 312-981-7200. Let us know the weather outside, too, as we continue to track this system as it makes its way across the Chicago area. After this on WGN. 254 on WGN. A few more minutes till we get news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. The 708 Icy sidewalks in Tinley Park. That is never fun. Please be careful out there. Man, when that glazed over, I told this in the 1 o'clock hour, Mike. When I drove home Wednesday night after the Hawks game, first of all, walking out of the stadium, I was slipping around big time. Got to my car. Main roadway is fine. Even the main roads and downers were fine. 63rd Street, great, no issues. I spun up my driveway. I mean, like, my car was slipping and sliding on my driveway. And I went out, then I ended up putting a ton of ice because Enrique was parked in the driveway. I was worried his car was going to slip out of its position and down the ice. Now, in retrospect, I realized that he was already firmly planted on the ground. But there were tons of videos of people's cars, if they drove up, they parked on the ice, of their cars going into the streets.
Wow, that's pretty crazy.
I saw some woman in Clarendon Hills chasing after her car.
Yeah, because I was driving that night, and it wasn't so much the driving was horrible as when I stopped, and I was just trying to navigate my own driveway. I felt like a 110-year-old because I was just like, I was taking these tiny little steps.
Yeah, for sure.
But it didn't fall.
Keep us posted, everyone, on what you're seeing in your area. Mike's got a quick question about the Madigan trial. Mike, what are you wondering from other Mike?
So I was wondering, basically, by having Madigan testify, they played that tape of him talking about how these guys got away like bandits for these jobs. I was wondering, number one, how much did that hurt him? And number two, my second question is, being born and raised in Illinois, knowing like Madigan's reputation, how do you even find a jury that's unbiased to even serve on that jury? I mean,
great question. Yeah, let me get Mike Leonard on it. I don't mean to cut you off, Mike.
Yeah, Michael, two great questions. I mean, number one, on the bias issue, let's start with that. This case was unique in how long the jury selection process was and the sort of leeway Judge Blakey gave to these lawyers to really explore every nook and cranny of what these people are thinking about, what news they're exposed to, their political affiliations and leanings, anything possible that could bear upon any bias or prejudice for or against Madigan. So I think that was obviated. I mean, funnily enough, as we talked about many, many months ago, during the jury selection, there were a lot of people, surprisingly, still barely knew who he was, knew nothing about the case. And I think that shows that there isn't the same interest as we had in other cases, but more importantly, where people get their news from, right? So I think especially the younger generations don't get the news from the traditional sources. I think that had something to do with it. Your second question, which was your first question about testifying, I think the defense team made a great decision to put him on the stand. I mean, I think already he was facing the fact that they had let in hours of tapes, all sorts of evidence about him. And so, you know, that was already in evidence. And so why not give him the chance to rebut and explain a lot of that? But more importantly, I think they really got the chance to and did a great job of really putting on a more human face on Madigan, allowing him to speak and explain himself and get some insight into his background. So I think that was a very good strategic decision. The problem is anytime you put your client on a course, they're going to take on some water. And he did in a couple instances, but I don't think that the attacks on his credibility from some of the evidence on cross-examination was significant enough to outweigh the great decision to put him on the stand and how he performed.
Okay. That's Mike Leonard's thought on that. Thank you, Mike, for the phone call. We got 2 minutes left. Let's get to the one issue, one of the issues you want to talk about our new Attorney General, Pam Bondi, and what she is doing to telling prosecutors about or just reminding them that we do have a federal death penalty. Walk us through this.
Yeah, so there is a federal death penalty, even though we don't have one in Illinois. So, you know, the death penalty by state is by state choice. But if you're facing a federal crime, there still is a federal death penalty for certain offenses, limited, right? So as a new AG, she's strongly encouraging federal prosecutors across the country to vigorously pursue cases and pursue the death penalty, essentially in any case that's possibly eligible, right?
Really?
So, and not only to that, but to revisit decisions already made not to seek the death penalty in pending cases, right? So you
does
might
she have the authority to? I mean, I know she could tell these prosecutors to advise. Can she go in and change the filing if she wanted to?
Oh yeah, she can direct a line prosecutor. Hey, we're going to seek the death penalty in this case, and they're going to follow suit. They're not. They don't have the discretion to say no, boss.
Yeah, because they
no
work for
boss
her.
Is boss. I'm not going to do it. So yeah, I think that's going to be a sea change. Although you got to keep in mind that the amount of federal offenses that are subject to death penalty are limited. So, but we're definitely going to see a lot more of that. And then secondly, a big thing that they've done is fired a whole bunch of federal prosecutors across the country. They hand-selected them if they were essentially participants in trying cases that involved January 6th defendants or otherwise handled January 6th defendants. They got fired.
You got 30 seconds. How does this affect you as a federal defense attorney?
Well, it'd be interesting. In the death penalty cases, you know, it might tangentially give us some more opportunities for that to defend those types of cases. But I think the emphasis is going to be a little bit away from a lot of the street crimes we've been seeing, but it's also going to be away from a lot of the white-collar cases that we see. You know, when we represent people who are involved in business fraud and things of that nature, I think it's going to be a very small emphasis on that.
Really quickly, your phone number, Mike?
312-380-6559. And John, I hope you watch the Super Bowl with a little bit of joy this year.
I will. That's Mike Leonard. That was Let's Get Legal. News next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.